USA.org.
Our co-host this week, once again, is Chris O'Brien. This is starting to become a habit. After a while on the Paracast, we may have you on more often, like in another year or so.
Okay.
Anyway, on last week's episode, I think, was one of the most heralded in recent memory. We featured 1 hour with the one, the only, Dr. Jacques Vallée. And I figure, you know, we really promoted this to a fare-thee-well. Loads of messages, anticipatory messages on our forums. And then we had the show. Record number of downloads, more listeners than ever. How many messages in our forums about the episode?
One. It was on an unrelated thread about the book. Someone said, oh, hey, you guys, Jacques Vallée was on. Good show. You know, it's not like we need any sort of accolades or, I don't know, some sort of validation or anything.
You know, people telling us, hey, folks, yeah, you're doing a good job salvaging our
shattered
egos.
No, we don't need that. We want to promote creative thinking, and I think Vallée came up with some very interesting insights, and some he kind of stuck his neck out a little bit talking about the abduction phenomenon and his feelings about it, and I was sure that that would at least generate one or two guffaws, but no.
That's very interesting. You know, we already know about that article that was in UFO Magazine about one particular abduction, shall we say, fiasco. Got to be very controversial. We've avoided having the person involved, the so-called victim, on this show because of that. But I figured after Dr. Vallée was basically saying that some of the techniques used in abduction research really don't pass muster, especially hypnotic regression. Forget about doing it on the telephone from 12,000 miles away. But, you know, a lot of criticisms there. I figured, well, nobody responded.
I don't know, Gene. I don't know. You know, sometimes we have, I guess, kind of innocuous guests on, and it creates, 200-300 responses on the forums, and then you get arguably the most notable personage in the field on, and it's like we never did the show. Oh, well, what can you do?
A lot of people were listening, and certainly a lot of people were downloading and listening to copies from our network, GCN. So we know the audience is out there, but maybe everyone agrees with Dr. Vallée? Okay.
Well, maybe we're weeding out the true believers, and we're just preaching to the choir.
Well, I would think, you know, there's still some wackos left, and that we'd be hearing from the wackos. We don't hear as much from the wackos, even when discussions get very animated on our forums. You know, the wacko factor has diminished. I think people have realized after 4.5 years, nearly 5 years of the Paracast, that when we say separating the signal from the noisemakers are gone. I mean, early on in our first year, after a couple of months, we featured the USA representative for a certain one-armed Swiss farmer who claims to be a UFO contactee, the only legitimate UFO contactee.
The only. No, you have to restate that. The only legitimate contactee. All the others are either liars, hoaxers, fakers, or delusional.
Or all
That's
of the above.
Important to underscore.
All of the above.
Right. Oh, well.
But, you know,
Matt, like I said,
we had such a crazy thread on the message forums, you know, like 1,000 or 2,000 messages. Finally, I had to put a stop to it. It got really out of hand, and sometimes these discussions reach a point where everybody is shouting at each other, and there's no way to really have a meaningful dialogue.
Yeah. Well, I guess you get the real heavy hitters on, and people just sit back and take notes and shake their heads and go, yeah, I need to get back up to speed on some things.
Well, the one thing Dr. Vallée presents to you is the reminder that we haven't solved the UFO mystery. It's a hell of a lot more complicated. than a lot of people might realize. You think E.T. landing on Earth is complicated, but it's a lot more than that.
I'll say. That's what the Paracast is all about.
We're not here basically to preach a specific theory. Understand that. We're not here to say UFOs are E.T., not E.T., crypto-terrestrial from another dimension. We're saying the answers are still out there. We don't have them. It's too premature to go, hey, we know the answers. Let's figure how we're going to bring about disclosure. Let's figure out how we're going to engage in exopolitics to understand the political insights of E.T.
Yeah, well, I think today's show is going to take it into the realm of pop culture, into the realm of how the media responds to this whole subject and how it has its own apparent agenda. And I think today's guest is a classic example of an open-minded, very up-to-speed individual who's extremely low-key in his involvement in the field. And we're very, I think we're very fortunate and lucky to have Tracy Tormé on, who is a co-author of a book with Jacques Vallée, one of two novels that Vallée has written. And Fast Walkers is a must-read, I think, for anyone interested in the field and out-of-the-box thinking. And I'm really looking forward to getting Tracy's take on where we're at here in the culture with our view of this very perplexing phenomenon. And it's going to be a lot of fun.
Now, I understand also, of course, that Tracy Tormé, yes, folks, he is the son of the other Tormé, although he's not a singer, or at least I don't think he is, but he has a background also in science fiction. He was also the executive story editor and a writer for Star Trek Next Generation. Hey, Trekkers, you know, this is a person who was there. He knew Captain Picard, he knew Data, he knew all them people.
And he was the one that came up with the whole holodeck scenario with Dixon Hill and the 30s gumshoe storylines, which I found particularly entertaining watching the show years ago.
That was his idea.
Yep.
Oh, that's fascinating. You know, they took some of that idea to the movie Star Trek First Contact,
yep,
where
they
have the Borg in the holodeck. And they recreate one of those scenes.
Yeah. Tracy, I've known Tracy for years, and he's a very interesting guy. He's one of the few people that's really firmly ensconced in the Hollywood, mainstream, if you will. He has just umpteen credits to his name. The show Sliders, one of my favorite shows from the 90s, was completely his idea. He pretty much was the moving force and motivating force behind getting that show on the air. But he actually took exception to the way the network was starting to try to, you know, sort of horn in on the creative side of the show, and he disassociated himself with the show. And he almost did the same thing with the Travis Walton movie that he co-produced, Fire in the Sky, when they changed around some of the very important details of Travis's experiences aboard the ship. He got into a bit of a tussle with the studio about that, and I'm sure we'll go into more detail on that with him on the episode.
Yeah, that's part of the problem with Hollywood, you know. Everybody wants to have their measure of control, of power. They want to be able to say, hey, we did this, we did that. They tamper with everything, they fiddle with everything, and sometimes you wonder how films get made. And you know, how few producers actually get the opportunity to basically do what they want to do. You know, for a George Lucas or a Steven Spielberg or a James Cameron, there's 100 or 1,000 other producer-directors who beg, borrow, steal, whatever, to get enough money to make a film, and then the executives say, you know, do it this way, do it that way, and sometimes you get a mess.
Yeah, well, this will be a very, I think, educational and eye-opening show for folks out there that wonder how Hollywood gets from point A to point Z. And
sometimes it's very convoluted. We have Chris O'Brien as the co-host. Coming up in our next segment, we have producer, writer, editor Tracy Tormé. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack! Attack! Of the Rockoids. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockoids lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockoids is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockoids, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition.
Gold isn't for you? Ted Anderson, president of Midas Resources, one of the world's premier gold and precious metal investing firms.
I get it.
You wouldn't buy gold if you believed that the government is doing a great job, that the Fed will stop handing out trillions of dollars like bailout candy, that Social Security would be there for you. That's not what's happening. You might even pass on gold if the stimulus package wouldn't fuel inflation, or that the dollar wouldn't lose value, or that your retirement would be secure. If all looks rosy to you, then now is not the time to buy gold. For the realists, there have never been more sobering reasons to diversify with gold. Since 2001, the U.S. dollar index has tanked 30%, while gold has risen 300%. Right now, savvy investors are adding gold to their portfolios. You should, too. Find out what they know. Call us, and I'll send you 10 reasons why gold will do very well, free. 800-686-2237. 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Hi, this is Alex Jones. You've heard me talk about the delicious, easy-to-fix, and very storable foods from eFoodsDirect.com. I've told you for years that eFoodsDirect has the best storable food on the planet. Now it's that time of year again, and their holiday special is here. They have two holiday-priced packs for you to put into your reserves for a secure future or to share with others. The first is a six-month bulk supply in 10 cans. And the second is a five-week supply of quick and easy-to-fix meals, including delicious bakery items shipped in heavy tote bags. Now, for a limited time, when you order two or more of these special holiday packs, you'll get free shipping on your entire order. Call now, 800-409-5633, or visit them at eFoodsDirect.com/Alex. That's 800-409-5633, or eFoodsDirect.com/Alex.
Question. What would you rather drink? Acidic water, which burns holes in your body and causes loss of bone mass, or alkaline water, which promotes high energy and vibrant health? The answer is clear. And if you're drinking acidic water, you're helping cancer cells and bacteria to grow out of control. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops combine a unique formula of the most alkaline minerals. Using Plasma pH Drops is the best way to alkalize your water and help you get rid of acid and regain your health and energy. Simply put 10 drops in the water you drink to raise the pH to a healthy alkaline level. Most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. Disease organisms like bacteria, viruses, or cancer cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops now by going directly to AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or by calling 269-409-1776. Again, 269-409-1776.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com. Get in on all the action at forum.theparacast.com.
We are pleased to have Tracy Tormé join us. He's a writer, producer, editor, and lots more. Man about town who learned of the Orient, the powers to cloud men's... No, that's not him. That's a guy named Lamont, I think. Our co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. And Tracy, you're someone I've wanted to talk to a long time. especially because of one credit that you have, which is you work on Star Trek Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, every Trekker in the nation wants to talk to you. So tell me, what role did you play on that show?
I was on the first two seasons. I wrote six episodes, and I produced and became the personal protege, I guess, of Gene Roddenberry. He really took me under his wing and taught me a lot and would show me a lot of kindness. So I was there from the ground floor right from the beginning and spent two seasons there.
Okay, only two seasons? Any reason?
I just kind of felt like I'd done my thing after 2 years and thought it was pretty much time to move on. I kind of tend to do that. So I was really satisfied with the time there, and it was time to try something else.
Okay, during those first two seasons, can you mention a couple of notable episodes where you'd recognize the real
I wrote an episode that won a Peabody Award called The Big Goodbye, and it was the original usage of the holodeck, and it created a character called Dixon Hill that was kind of like an alter ego for Captain Picard. It was my chance to kind of do Raymond Chandler kind of writing. That was a pretty memorable one, got a lot of notoriety. I did one called Conspiracy, which was also considered one of the darkest Star Treks of all time. It caused a lot of controversy because it had kind of a downbeat, unhappy ending, which they weren't used to doing.
Now, can you tell us briefly in what way was it a downbeat ending?
It actually, the ending sort of leaves an ominous tone that the bad guys perhaps maybe got the better of the Federation people. And it was left open to where they were still formulating this sort of cabal inside of the Federation. And I remember I caught a lot of flack for, you know, originally for them not wanting me to do that ending because they just said, you know, our endings are usually happy and everyone's resolved and everything's fine at the end. And they weren't sure they wanted to open the can of worms of going in a darker direction. But I was really proud of them for doing that episode, and that was a personal favorite of mine, so... But I did six altogether, and it was a really, really great experience. It really was.
Now, the Star Trek universe is kind of special, and, you know, we always think about the various generations of it. And now, of course, we've gone back to the beginning in an alternate reality with a new Star Trek that J.J. Abrams produced with new people, except for, of course, Leonard Nimoy. What was your reaction to that movie?
It was interesting. It was definitely so different. It was so action. It was very action oriented. I felt it was a little light on plot sometimes and a little heavy on the visuals. But I understand that it was a major, you know, expensive movie. But there's so much room to play with in the Star Trek universe. There's just so many permutations and things to do with it. And I think there's room for everybody pretty much in it, and J.J. Abrams had his take, and I remember some of the Trekkies were kind of upset with the scene between, I guess it was with Spock and Uhura, I think it was, having a romantic situation or whatever. They thought that was, like, not true to the
Spock
original.
Spock and Uhura.
Yeah. That ruffled some feathers, I remember, but, you know... Learning from sort of Gene Roddenberry's side like I did, I really got a handle on what he was really trying to say with all of his Star Trek stuff. And as has been said many times before, it was really an allegory about our times. And it was just a way he told me he really wanted to do important stories and social relevance. And the only way to do that was to set them on another planet. That's kind of what part of it is.
Yeah. Now, as far as Gene Roddenberry, I've heard different stories about his personality that he was somewhat difficult to deal with. What did you find? Someone who he took under his wing.
Yes, he could be very intimidating. You know, he was 6'4" and a really hulking, large man with very piercing eyes. And I remember when I first met him, one of the first things he ever said to me was, "So what do you plan on doing with my Star Trek?" And I remember gulping and thinking, uh-oh, and how in the world do I answer that, you know? And he definitely was a very powerful figure. He knew what he wanted. He didn't compromise fools very well. If you got on his bad side, you could be in a lot of trouble. And I witnessed some people really struggle with him. But I was very lucky. He was really good to me. I really went on to do sliders basically on his inspiration. He's the one who said to me, you're going to create your own series one day. And then he kind of told me what some of the things I would expect that would come along with that. And he prepared me for the idea of creating my own show, and probably wouldn't have necessarily even done that if it hadn't been for him.
Sliders. Tell us about Sliders. We're talking about something that happened some years back. Maybe some of our listeners don't recall Sliders.
Sliders was a story about people that are traveling from dimension to dimension, from parallel Earth to parallel Earth. The original concept was to be able to land on some planets where Earth has gone through a strange transformation, and the South has won the Civil War, or the Nazis have won the Second World War, or that kind of thing, all the way to what we used to call the bumblebee worlds, which were the ones where everything is exactly the same, but there's a different type of bumblebee, you know, and you just 99.9% of everything is the same, so you think you're back home, but you aren't, you know. So it was a great canvas to do, again, sort of allegorical stories. And that's where, I guess, my Roddenberry influence came in. It was a double-edged sword to do that show because the people at Fox were extremely hands-on and always very nervous about the subject matter. I don't know if Fox has probably changed in the days since then, but at that time they were very worried about offending people and about kind of being politically correct. And we used to struggle and struggle and struggle. It was a constant struggle to try to do these sort of edgy shows that we really wanted to do that actually said something.
Well, Fox is kind of strange. You know, of course they have the X-Files, mm-hmm. but they also had Firefly, which they killed so quickly and destroyed so quickly, it never had a chance to flourish.
Yeah, that was the big struggle we had, was just getting on the same page with them. And they used to say we did shows subversively. We would sneak things into shows that we weren't really supposed to do. So it was a constant battle for that. And the show ended up running 5 seasons, and it really jumped the shark, as they say. In the 3rd season, it became a completely different show. I didn't even recognize it anymore. So I'd say the first 2.5 seasons are one show, and the last 2.5 seasons are another show. And there's a certain amount of frustration involved with doing it, but the ones that worked, I was really proud of. So it just wasn't always a consistent thing.
We have Tracy Torme. I'm Gene Steinberg, the co-host, Chris O'Brien. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey neighbors, in this ongoing challenging economy, companies of all sizes must find new ways to cut costs. Every dollar saved helps the bottom line. That's why I recommend a web conferencing solution for your business. GoToMeeting. It helps improve overall business communications and efficiencies, not to mention improving the global economy. The easiest, most affordable for me is GoToMeeting, brought to you by Citrix. Reduce time on the road by presenting, training, and demonstrating online. Improve conference calls by collaborating in real time by sharing your screens. GoToMeeting is the best way to increase your productivity and cut costs. I've used GoToMeeting. It's great. My listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 45 days. That's 1 month of unlimited online meetings free. For this special offer, go to GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use their promo code PODCAST. That's GoToMeeting.com, promo code PODCAST, for this special free 45-day trial. Check it out.
Still worrying? From GMO to organic food in jeopardy, divided by economic turmoil, there is still an answer. With just a little knowledge easily acquired, you will literally see food everywhere. Author Linda Runyon has these skills from having lived this way of life and created the tools so you could too. Wild food is economical, nutritious, freely available, abundant, and free for the taking. It is a skill that takes little time to learn, but stays with you for life. And now for a limited time, it's all on sale. It's called the Bye Bye Old Website Sale. Can you guess what's coming? Absolutely everything's on sale across the board, including our already discounted packages. And you know, the holidays are coming up fast. We don't know if we're going to have another sale this year. This was the only one in 2010 so far. We've been lucky to keep our prices the same since 2008, but who knows what the future will bring. So go to ofthefield.com now or call toll-free 1-888-51-EAT-FREE. That's ofthefield.com or call 1-888-51-EAT-FREE and cross food off your to-do list.
Where have all the military surplus stores gone? Don't worry, you don't need one. Because everything you need at Military Surplus is at mainmilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E, military.com. One of the last surviving true military surplus stores in the country. Go online now to mainmilitary.com and discover a source for hard-to-find surplus items at true surplus prices. Surplus gun cleaning kits as low as $2.99. Complete chemical suits as low as $11.99. See our huge selection of gas masks, filters, and accessories. Finish and M10 gas masks are 3 for $30, and Swiss filters are 3 for $12. Searching for Strike Anywhere matches? MainMilitary.com has them, plus a whole new product line of survival and first aid kits and lots more. Get free shipping on orders over $50 only at MainMilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E, military.com. Or call 877-608-0179, 877-608-0179. MainMilitary.com, the main name in military supply.
Attention GCN listeners, do you have a Patriot on your Christmas list that's nearly impossible to shop for? How would you like the ability to get top-of-the-line, hard-to-find gifts at equally hard-to-beat prices without leaving the comfort of your home? Why fight the crowd? Simply log on to your computer for great gifts and deals for the off-the-grid enthusiast in your family. At offthegridchristmas.com, you'll find great prices on the most popular off-the-grid gifts available today. At offthegridchristmas.com, you'll find unbeatable deals on emergency backup power, herb and vegetable seeds, dehydrated foods, emergency evacuation packs, solar ovens, gun safes, and a host of truly unique stocking stuffers. In these hard times, why not give a gift that really counts, a gift that could truly make a difference? Go to offthegridchristmas.com and our Christmas video highlighting perfect gifts for the off-the-grid fans in your family. Unbeatable gear, unbeatable prices, no more searching. offthegridchristmas.com. That's offthegridchristmas.com.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
This is Jacques Vallée. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So, Tracy, we want to tell you here that Chris, you know, has an assignment. His only assignment, he doesn't have to say anything in the show. He just has to say, when I say you're in, he says,
the Paracast.
You're slow at this. You know, you got to kind of pick up. You're off key there. He needs a director. You know, a good director. Like a guy named Spielberg, I understand it. No, he's not available. He's too expensive for us. Tracy Torme is our guest. We're talking about, first of all, his background in science fiction TV, Star Trek The Next Generation, Sliders. So half of Sliders was good, half Jumped the Shark. For those in the civilian world who don't know what Jump the Shark means, it relates back to a Happy Days episode, right?
I think that's right, yes.
Where they had some crazy thing there involving, oh, forget it.
It's just basically the moment where almost all series seem to get off the main track and go down the wrong road. That's kind of what it is.
It's when suddenly they bring on all the special stars. No storylines would bring on some famous star. It's not like, for example, Law and Order, which continued for, what, 20 seasons, and maybe it jumped the shark with the first episode, but they kept it going through subsequent generations. There's even a Law & Order UK now, by the way.
Oh, my God.
And the Law & Order UK, Jamie Bamber from Battlestar Galactica, he plays one of the detectives. And then this woman from Doctor Who, one of the Doctor Who assistants, plays an assistant DA or the UK equivalent. So that show never jumps the shark.
Interesting.
I'm impressed, Jane. You really keep up with this stuff.
Oh, please. You know, my mind is a steel trap. The problem is here is that most of the time it's closed.
I turned my TV off about 2.5 years ago, so I'm taking notes.
Before we get into the more factual stuff, let's deal with a more recent show. You were a writer on Carnival,
right,
which was kind of an eclectic kind of show on one of the pay TV channels. Tell our listeners more about it.
Well, it was an HBO show, and it was about a carnival that was touring the Midwest, the Dust Bowl, back in the 30s. And it's really about good versus evil. It's sort of like there's two titanic forces that are surrounding the carnival, and the dark side and the light side. And so it was a chance to do some pretty powerful stories about the dual nature of man and the dark side that we all have, etc. And I was really intrigued by doing something set in that time period. I thought that was kind of an interesting time period, shortly before World War II, etc. So it was a very challenging show. It was unlike anything I'd really ever written before, and I had a really good time with it, and very intensely sort of intellectual show compared to most television.
How long did it last? How did the public react to it?
It lasted two seasons. The public developed a pretty strong cult following for it. I mean, people that liked it really, really liked it. And there were cultish sort of followings for it, the same way you've had with Star Trek and things like that. Ultimately, it was just too expensive. It was very expensive to do a show set in that period. And after 2 years, HBO just didn't want to spend the money anymore. So we all felt there was a lot more to tell there when it ended. But it was really a fun experience, too.
Who was in the show? What are the major stars that you might know from other TV series?
Do you know Clancy Brown?
Yeah.
He's been in a million things. He was one of the stars. Adrian Barbeau was in it. A guy named Nick Stahl, who has gone on to do a number of things. It was kind of an ensemble cast, and they were sort of intentionally looking for some people whose faces weren't overly familiar. And they found a really great, sort of gritty group of actors that really helped to carry the show. So it was really a consistent challenge to try to keep the level of writing high on it and to do things that were, again, sort of more intellectually based. So whenever you get a chance where the network sort of lets you do things that make people think, that's a very rare opportunity, because they're always usually trying to dumb it down. And so when they take the reins off and they allow you to really explore some, you know, pretty far-reaching concepts, that's always, you know, bonus and gravy for writers.
Well, just very briefly before we move on to more factual pursuits, in today's television, is there anything comparable in terms of originality, being able to tell a story without the typical limitations imposed by television networks?
Well, I'm like Chris, I guess. I sort of stay away from television, main network television, because for my purposes, I don't like being influenced by something else, and I don't like seeing something and then thinking, oh, that's a little bit like something else I'm working on or something I want to work on or whatever. So I pretty much have that hermit lifestyle when it comes to media. I don't keep up with a lot of shows that you would expect that I would. I really kind of have a very eclectic taste and, you know, only really watch the stuff that appeals to me. And so I'm very far behind on a lot of these shows, and I'm not a great person to give an answer to that, then, I guess.
I know the feeling. People for years were asking me, what do you think of Lost? And I said, I don't know. I'm lost, man. What are you talking about? And then finally,
me too. Yeah.
Hulu came out, and I decided, hey, what the heck, I'm going to check out an episode of Lost. I watched the opening couple of episodes, and it didn't grab me, but I got through that. And then, boy, I'll tell you, over the next year, I devoured all those episodes. And I felt that it was a very, very interesting concept. I felt it kind of lagged in the last three seasons. But, boy, I'll tell you, those first 3 years, very, very original, very fresh. Very interesting.
One day I kind of figure that I'll catch up on a lot of this, that I'll just sit down with some time on my hands and watch the old shows that everybody always assumed that I did, and catch up. So it's a far-off goal in my mind, but I probably will do it one day.
Cool. All right, well, obviously there's a point where you got involved in our paranormal universe. Mm-hmm. You wrote, for example, a science fiction novel with Jacques Vallée. Tell us how that came to be.
Jacques and I met on a project at Universal Studios called Messengers of Deception, and with director Joe Dante was involved at the time, too.
and Robert K. Weiss, who later went on to do Sliders with me, was another person involved with that. And it was a conspiratorial piece, which was very unique in that it was sort of 50 or 60% conspiratorial, parallax view, 3 days of the Condor kind of story. But then on the other hand, we took a very satirical look at UFO field, and we had a Brotherhood of Galactic Science that was on television 24 hours a day, spewing sort of New Age beliefs, and sort of it was jocking my way to sort of lampoon some of the stuff that was going on in UFO circles at the time, and that's where that all came from, was that I wrote an original screenplay, and then Jacques basically took it and adapted it into the novel Fastwalker. And that was the novel that we ended up writing together. And it all came from the original script for Messengers of Deception.
Did Fastwalker ever have a tendency of going into a movie or what?
You know, It really wasn't looked at in that direction. I don't know exactly why. I'd have to kind of search my memory and try to remember why. But we weren't going to be doing Messengers of Deception because there was a big falling out between Joe Dante and the other producers on the project. And then they thought it was very expensive and everything, too. So Jacques didn't want to see it just kind of die on the vine. So then he adapted it into Fastwalker.
A reminder, neighbors, if you have something to say about the Paracast, pro, con, and certainly we hope not indifferent, send your message to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And by the way, some of you ask us to let you in early on forthcoming guests so you can suggest questions in our forums or by email. Unfortunately, sometimes we book the guests at the last possible moment, but if we have the time, we'll let you know. We have Tracy Torme. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Fate Magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate Magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Hi, this is Tamar from Namecheap. We're a domain name and web hosting company, and we really care about our customers. With domain name purchases, Namecheap offers free SSL and free Whois Guard for a year to protect your identity from spammers. Most importantly, we care about you. If you'd like to learn more, please visit us at radio.namecheap.com, radio.namecheap.com for web hosting and domain name specials. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Namecheap or become a fan of ours on Facebook at facebook.com/Namecheap. See you online.
I'm concerned about food for my family in the event of an emergency, and I know you are too. Are you ready? Don't wait for an emergency to happen. Put a plan together now with quality dehydrated food from Ready Reserve Foods. For nearly 40 years, Ready Reserve Foods has been in continuous operation, canning the finest in dehydrated foods. Other companies just broker canned foods. Ready Reserve is the manufacturer, controlling quality from start to finish with double enameled cans and nitrogen packing for maximum shelf life. Ready Reserve offers a balanced selection of fruits, vegetables, dairy products, proteins, and grains. Choose from a variety of pre-selected units or order by individual can to customize your own plan. When you purchase from Ready Reserve Foods, you are buying factory direct at wholesale prices. Call today for a free catalog, 1-800-453-2202, or visit ReadyReserveFoods.com. Call 1-800-453-2202. Ready Reserve Foods. Factory direct, wholesale pricing.
Becoming a modern smoker is now easier and more cost-effective, thanks to LeCig. Traditional smokers the world over love LeCig. E-cigarettes with a look, feel, and taste of real cigarettes, but without the nasty smoke, ashes, or stains. LeCig is powered by revolutionary microelectronic technology. A small, rechargeable battery and unique replaceable cartridge provide all the satisfaction and benefits of smoking without the smoke and all the hazards. See the large variety of LeCig e-cigarette supplies and accessories at LeCig.com. That's L-E-C-I-G. LASIG.com. LASIG is competitively priced, comes with the best customer service, a 30-day warranty, and satisfaction guaranteed. What a great gift idea. For a 10% discount, mention GCN when you call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Ask for fast, free, same-day shipping. Order online at LASIG.com and use promo code GCN at checkout. That's LECIG.com. LASIG, for today's modern smoker.
It's the winter cold and flu supplement sale at HerbalHealer.com. Take advantage of Herbal Healer Academy's incredible savings on the best cold and flu supplements available. Many of you know elderberry is exceptional against viral infections. Right now, Herbal Healer Academy has elderberry power, regularly priced at $16.95, now incredibly low, at only $10 for 60 vegetarian caps. For children and seniors, our Herbal Healer Academy Flu Away Elderberry Liquid is only $13 for a 4-ounce bottle. Also on super sale, olive leaf capsules, oregano oil plus capsules, and our incredible respirate formula, oregacillin physician strength capsules for your lungs. Normally $34.95, now just $25. Hit the winter specials link at HerbalHealer.com for these cold and flu supplement specials and other on sale products like apple cider vinegar, brain power, and neuro recovery. New customers get a free catalog with your first order. Log on and hit the winter specials now at HerbalHealer.com.
On air, online, and on demand, we are the GCN Radio Network.
Hello, this is John Burroughs, one of the witnesses to the Rendlesham UFO incident. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We have Tracy Torme this week on the Paracast. I'm Gene Steinberg. Our ever hardworking co-host is Chris O'Brien. Now, maybe we should pick up on some other things here involved in his paranormal pursuits. For that, Chris, take over.
Tracy, I remember distinctly when we met was at the Crestone 2 conference, I think, as we unofficially called it at the time. I think that was in 1994. And you kind of let slip that you were working on a very interesting movie project about the Travis Walton case. Fire in the Sky, which I'm sure quite a number of our listeners have seen. And why don't you give us a little background information about your involvement with Travis and how the movie project developed?
Well, I went to Beverly Hills High School, of all things. Most people don't like to admit to that. But we used to have study hall where we could listen to the radio in our library. And I remember being at Beverly High, and a story came across the news on the radio about this poor woodsman in Arizona who had been supposedly zapped by a flying saucer, taken away for days, and they thought that his friends had murdered him. That's where I first heard about it, and it just, you know, really struck me like, wow, this sounds really strange. I've got to keep my eyes on this. So years later, I became very close with Bud Hopkins and got involved with a lot of abduction research. And I thought to myself, what's the best abduction story really to tell from a filmic standpoint? And I decided it would be the Travis Walton case. So I tried to call him, and he had had an unlisted number for 10 years, and he had just put his number back in the phone book like 2 days before I called him. It was one of those really amazing coincidences. And I had to spend quite a lot of time convincing him that I wasn't out to rip him off, that I wasn't out to bastardize his story or anything like that, that I really wanted to do a faithful adaptation of it. And so I had to earn his trust over a period of time. And so I ended up taking many trips to Arizona and ended up tracking down a lot of the people involved, both pro and con, and just researched it and researched it and researched it until I finally felt I knew the story pretty well. And eventually we sold it to Paramount and finally got it made after trying for about 6 or 7 years. We finally got it off the ground.
Well, I seem to recall that there was some controversy about the actual film itself, that some of these scenes that were actually used in the final cut of the film, especially the scenes aboard the actual craft, there was some controversy surrounding the depiction of the events. Do you want to address that a little bit? I know it was...
Sure. That was a very, actually, very, very simple story, was that I had done a miniseries for CBS called Intruders. And by complete coincidence, Intruders was airing for its second time as we were in pre-production on Fire in the Sky. And somebody over at Paramount saw it and said, oh, my God, they've already done this. They've done this. They've done the little aliens with the big heads and the big eyes and the guy being, you know, put down on the table and blah, 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 blah. So they went into a panic mode. They suddenly were thinking, uh-oh, we may not have a movie. And they came to us with a very stern admonition, basically, to say that the alien sequences had to be changed. They had to be unique. They had to be different than anything we'd seen before, etc. So we were then in a real quandary because we wanted to stay true to the story and we didn't want to fictionalize. So we ended up working out a compromise where the director and myself and Travis, we all sort of quizzed him about some of the things he was feeling during his onboard experience, like a feeling of claustrophobia, a feeling like he couldn't breathe very well. And out of that came a scene where they put a mask over his face. And what I'm trying to tell you is that we sort of, again, coming back to that word allegory, we kind of came back to an allegorical telling of his story where we changed the details and tried to recreate the feelings that he basically had while he was on board this craft or whatever it was. And we succeeded in the sense that it definitely affected Travis the way we were hoping it would. I mean, it really unsettled him and took him back to the night of his incident successfully. But there were a bunch of UFO people that were very upset, that felt like we had fictionalized the story, and there was another example of Hollywood kind of going off the deep end. And at first I was kind of defensive about that and thought, you know, that it really was a small-minded attitude at that time. But you know what? Looking back on it, I can understand a lot better why it would have upset people. And if I really had had my druthers, I wouldn't have done it that way. But we really had no choice if we wanted to make the movie.
Those scenes are so riveting in his book, and the descriptions of the actual experience are just, I think, so... They're just permanently written into the annals of ufology. Some of those details are just very, very, I think, iconic in the way that they come across to the reader in the book. And I could see why some people were a little dismayed by that. But at the same time, I also happened to catch, just by sheer coincidence, I think it was a Montel Williams show with Travis and Mike Rogers, and I seem to remember Phil Klass sitting in the front row just dogging those guys about it.
Yeah.
And how Travis said, look, you know, it's how I felt. This really did capture how I felt. And
it was really
he didn't want to apologize.
Well, it was funny because when the film first came out, the skeptics, the guys that are with PsyCop and stuff like that, they really tried every trick in the book to try to discredit the film. I mean, it was really kind of pathetic to watch them go to work and try to smear everybody. And it just, I guess it shows that something about that story really frightened them because it was a hard story to dismiss, you know. But again, going back to the previous point, I definitely can understand why people wanted it to be closer to the truth. And in our original screenplay, it followed his book description virtually 100%. I mean, it literally just blow by blow, we recreated everything he remembered. And then because of that incident that I told you about, we just weren't allowed to do that.
Well, this brings up an interesting point about the influence that Hollywood has in the creative process, and it's been a bone of contention of mine, and I voiced it on a number of occasions on the Paracast here, that Hollywood has a tendency to go for the entertainment value as opposed to the accuracy, and it's really unfortunate that you were placed in a position where you really literally, to save the project, you had no choice but to sort of acquiesce to their wishes. What do you think about Hollywood just in general, the way they treat the UFO subject? I mean, we've had quite a bit of of water going to the bridge. There's been a lot of projects over the years that do, deal with this subject. What are your feelings? If you had to grade Hollywood, what would you say?
You know, UFOs in general, I believe, are very, very misunderstood and misreported. The number of people that really seem to have a good handle on what's really going on is pretty small. Everybody has their own opinions, and a lot of people are zealots about their opinions, and they don't really understand a lot of what goes on, and it's such a complex field. It really is. You have to spend a lot of time separating the wheat from the chaff on all UFO stories. That's my opinion anyway. I really lost patience a long time ago with people that come along and say, oh, the aliens are coming from these, you know, seven star systems, and here's what their names are, and here's why they're here, and here's what they're going to do. And whenever anybody seems to have all the answers to UFO questions, I basically tend to think they have none of the answers.
Run away. I remember sitting with you in 1998 at the MUFON International Symposium in Denver. And the two of us literally got up and left because we were so just dismayed. And actually, I seem to remember being kind of upset and angry at what I was hearing. And I remember the two of us walking down the hall, just shaking our head, looking at each other, going, man, I can't believe this.
Yeah.
Where do you come down? Where do you come down? I mean, you've spent time with out-of-the-box thinkers. I met you through Tom Adams, one of my major early influences in my investigative process, David Perkins. You've spent time with Jacques Vallée. These are all out of the box, very open-minded, very brilliant thinkers, in my estimation. Where do you come down? I mean, what does your gut tell you that we're dealing with here?
Before he gives that answer, when you ask a lengthy, out-of-the-box question, the problem sometimes arises where we have to take an out-of-the-box break. We have Tracy Torme, writer and producer, joining us. The co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNlive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
The people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.